Tuesday, December the 2nd. Pretty nice day, partly sunny and seasonal. A high today, 33. Tonight, then, cloudy, a low of 22. Another nice day tomorrow, sunny and seasonal on Wednesday, again, a high of 33. This morning, wind is from the south at 6. Pretty good cloud cover, but you can see a little bit of the blue sky. 29 degrees in Racine, 23 this morning in Kenosha, 18 for Burlington, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva. For WGTD News, I'm Dave McGrath. WGTD News time coming up on 8:11. The morning show with Greg Berg up next.
WGTD is supported by Carthage College, dedicated to combining an environment of reflection and self-discovery with a culture of high expectation, designed to allow students to uncover and ignite their potential. More information about undergraduate and adult education opportunities at carthage.edu. Support for WGTD's morning show also comes to you from Andrea's, a Kenosha tradition since 1911, a unique shopping experience time and time again, and that's what brings you back. And don't forget about Jack's Cafe. Andrea's, a proud supporter of WGTD's morning show. That familiar music is something I bet a lot of you recognize, the overture to George Frederick Handel's great masterwork, Messiah. And it is always a very special treat when one can encounter this marvelous music live in performance. And it's particularly a treat and a relatively rare treat when the work can be experienced in its splendid entirety. And this is something which Dr. James Kinchin, Director of Choral Activities at the UW Parkside, very much believes in. And I've had the pleasure, actually, of participating with him as a soloist on a couple of different occasions in performances of Handel's Messiah, start to finish, every note in place. And really, it's when you experience Messiah in that respect that you come to fully understand the greatness of this work. Dr. Kinchin is going to be presiding over three performances of Handel's entire Messiah coming up in the near future, and I am excited that he can join us today on the morning show to talk about this masterpiece, for us to play a few excerpts from it and discuss some of the specific ways in which we encounter Handel's genius in full flower in this amazing work. And we'll hear more about the specifics of these performances that are coming up on December 6th, 7th, and 8th. Dr. James Kinchin, we welcome you back to the morning show.
Thank you, Greg. It is great to be here.
Good to have you here, and it's always a pleasure to talk about Handel's Messiah. I'm going to mention something briefly and probably just this one time, and I'm not too embarrassed about doing it because these are two events that are fairly far apart on the calendar, but several weeks after your performances, there'll be another sing-along Messiah at First United Methodist Church, which is an entirely
yes.
different kind of experience, and by no means the entire Messiah, but it's the 10th anniversary of that sing-along Messiah, so we're doing a little more of it than we usually do and having a little larger complement of soloists, and so that's going to be an exciting, fun time on December 21st. But in the meantime, it is so important for us to talk today about this work, start to finish, what it is like to conduct it and to sing it and to hear it when you are hearing this work in all its full grandeur. First of all, when is the first time you conducted Messiah? And when was the first time you got to conduct the whole Messiah?
Well, the very first time I conducted more than a chorus or two here or there, ironically, you mentioned the December 21st sing-along. Well, back in 1992, we did a kind of sing-along on campus where we did substantial pieces.
I forgot about that. Yeah,
yeah, and you were there.
Right.
And but it was in 1993 that I got the idea that I'd like to conduct it, and that that I really wanted to look at conducting the whole work. And of course, I'd never done the entire piece. And, you know, and I was a little bit daunted by just the prospect of whether that would be something that an audience would really respond to. And as I looked at it and studied it, the more I did, the more convinced I became that it really did stand as an entire piece, that Handel was a genius. Generations after Handel, Mozart, Beethoven, all of those people admired Handel for lots of reasons, not least of which his ability to get the dramatic sense of a thing.
Mm.
So Handel is just a wonderful dramatist, and he was able to fit all of those scriptures together that Charles Jennings gave him. Because Charles Jennings was the librettist and friend, most of the time, friend of Handel, who actually put the scriptures together, collated them to form the libretto for this work. But Handel pulls it off wonderfully. And when you look at the way movements relate to each other, keys relate to each other, tempi relate to each other, it flows wonderfully.
Right. My experience from soloing with you in a maybe that first crop of full Messiahs,
yeah, 1993, December
right.
of 1993.
Right. I remember being rather amazed at how the performance just seemed to, in a sense, race by. I mean that in the best sense of the word, that by doing it complete, it actually felt shorter and more concise, because somehow there is this flow to it, this organic flow that is impossible to achieve if you are chopping the thing up and shuffling it around and leaving things out.
Yeah.
It's just not the same experience at all.
Not at all. And, you know, and I'm thinking, everybody knows, and I put everybody in quotes here, everybody knows the Hallelujah Chorus, right? And it's a wonderful, wonderful chorus. But until you have heard this whole oratorio summed up and concluded in that majestic anthem, Worthy is the Lamb and the Amen, I mean, that's about as wonderful and as exalted a feeling that you can get from any music. And that surpasses in grandeur quite a bit the Hallelujah. Worthy is the Lamb and those Amens.
Oh.
And how Handel, the genius that he was, takes that last chorus, the Amen, and how he uses the first five notes of the major scale, and he constructs themes. And then he does what we call a retrograde of that. He does it backwards, and he constructs themes, and then he puts it forwards. And then at the end, the sopranos are soaring to these high A's, and it's just the most wonderful, the most majestic thing. It's probably, if there's any sense we have here, what it might be like to be around the throne of God, it's got to be that.
Right. Yeah, it's quite an amazing piece. And, of course, we're talking, on the other hand, about all kinds of music that most people never hear.
Yes.
And that there are even certain moments in Handel's Messiah that even when you're going to something that is pretty much a complete performance or just about a complete performance, there will be certain moments that do not get done.
Yeah.
And so it's really only when you hear a piece like a performance like this where it is a concerted effort to be absolutely complete that you hear every single note part of this.
Yes.
What about the matter of the variation, the fact that, as far as we know, no two performances of Handel's Messiah were ever identical during his lifetime? I mean, he was, as was the custom in that day, of course, constantly making adjustments for different soloists or different circumstances. So what is the challenge for you as the conductor in terms of what Messiah, in a sense, to do?
Well, you know, it is always interesting to think about all of the possibilities that are there within the work. And at the same time, we have to say it's a tribute to Handel's genius that he was able to insert and then later remove certain movements. So for example, the sound is gone out, which is a chorus that we do, and it's Handel's chorus. At some point, he had this wonderful tenor that he wanted to give a little extra something to, and so he substituted an aria for that sound that's gone out. Or the Refiner's Fire, which most listeners are accustomed to being done by the rumbling voice of a bass, in that form was never done by bass. There was a shorter kind of version of that. But then Handel had this wonderful male singer, a castrato, and who had this magnificent voice, and he did what is now the D minor version of Refiner's Fire aria. And so you're right. You know, he had a voice here. He would transpose something that he didn't have access to that voice in a later performance. He'd put it back in another key, and yet all of that maintains integrity. Now, I will have to confess that in our performances, we have not attempted to copy any one particular version. And historically, we know pretty much what those versions are, the significant versions. For example, the premier version, which is the one that was sung first in Dublin, Ireland, in April of 1742, that performance had certain variations, as you say, that were later changed when it received its premiere in London the following year, 1743. He skipped 1744, did it in London again in 1745, a little different, and then skipped until 1749 when he did it, and at that point it becomes an annual thing. And so we know basically what variations were done with each one of those. And so we've not attempted to repeat either any one of those specifically, but to get from all of those available what I think is a pretty good sampling of what Handel intended.
One of my most pleasant memories of that first collaboration that you and I had on Messiah was that it was more than three performances, as I recall.
Yes,
it was maybe
yes.
more like five or six,
yes,
and
sure. yeah,
a couple
yeah,
in Milwaukee yeah, and yeah. one someplace else, and at least one or two around here. But that even within that run of Messiahs, there was some variation.
Mm-hmm.
That on one of them, you had the alto soloist sing this aria, but
yes.
in the next performance,
right.
the soprano sang
right,
that aria
right,
instead.
Yes,
and,
yes.
and I can remember a couple moments where the two women would look at each other thinking, okay, am I doing this one or are you doing this one? I mean, even in the midst
yeah.
of the performance. But that was really exciting in that it just underscored what a dynamic work this was.
Yeah, yeah.
It was not, in a sense, carved in stone ever during
yeah,
his life.
No, and that's absolutely correct. And speaking of variations, one of my favorite ones, and this is one we have done some, we won't be doing it this time, but we've done it some, and that's the Rejoice Greatly. That's a wonderful coloratura aria for soprano in 4/4 time, and it has all of these 16th note melismas.
Right.
But he also did a version of that in 12/8, which makes it essentially a jig. So
so groups of three instead of groups of four.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And that's an exciting, you know, variation to hear. Yeah.
Wow.
And then also there are some possibilities just an alternating voice. So for example, there's this very moving sequence of solo pieces in the first part of the second, the first half of the second part, where after the chorus is sung, he trusted in God that he would deliver him. Let him deliver him if he delight in him. And then they are chastened by the soloist who says, "Thy rebuke hath broken his heart."
Mm.
And then behold and see if there be any sorrow like unto his sorrow. He was cut off from the land of the living, and thou didst not leave his soul in hell. Well, those arias we alternate between tenor and soprano.
Ah.
You know, the same recitatives and arias, but just having different voices sing them as they were sometimes shared or sung in the time of Handel.
Wow. So I suppose when you make some of these choices, you're probably prompted by a couple different things. Maybe I've never done it this way before, I just want to try it, or maybe I have such and such a singer that I just so vividly imagine sounding wonderful in this piece, so
yeah.
I'll
yeah.
make that choice. I mean, is it kind of a mixture of different things
yeah,
that
I
prompts these choices?
I think it's a mixture of things. And also, in a most practical way, the availability, the ready availability of music, of parts, to support a particular variant. You know, sometimes they're easy. For example, with the G version of Rejoice, that was pretty easy. There was also a G minor version of Refiner's Fire that's pretty easy to come by. On the other hand, you'd have to dig a little bit if you wanted to do the break forth into joy that he did as a chorus and duet from earlier in the run of Messiahs. And there's some variants that are easier to find music for. And so that always is in a practical sense, one of the determinants.
Mm. For those of you just joining us, I'm speaking today on the morning show with Dr. James Kinchin, who is Director of Choral Activities at the University of Wisconsin-Parkside, and he will be conducting performances of Handel's Messiah, the complete Messiah, in performances December 6th, 7th, and 8th. And so we are talking on today's morning show about this magnificent masterpiece by Handel. We're going to be playing a couple of relatively rare gems from the score, but I thought it would be interesting, Dr. Kinchin, to take a moment and play the very first solo music that this follows immediately upon the overture that we
yes.
sampled just at the top. So this is the recitative Comfort Ye My People. And this is one of my favorite recordings of it by someone who doesn't sing a lot of oratorio. He's more of an opera singer, but a very musical singer, Peruvian tenor Juan Diego Flores. And I really love this recording. But before we hear it, anything you want to say about what Handel achieves in this sublime moment?
Yeah, well, he sets everything up with the overture. And the overture was pretty standard for both oratorio and opera. You know, that instrumental piece that sort of sets the stage. And then after the instruments have played their final cadence of the overture, what we might expect is something that's very high energy, very upbeat, but instead it's very calming, and the text, comfort ye. Mm. And just know that everything's going to be all right. And that's the tone that's set here. And he does it with an accompanied recitative. And so there are periods where the rhythm is fairly constant, and then there are those moments where the tenor has some freedom in declaiming the text. And particularly toward the end of that, Handel sets up a change of mood. The tenor says, "The voice of him that crieth in the wilderness," and then that sets the way sets the stage for the aria, which is indeed a more up-tempo kind of thing.
Mm. And that's a very good point, that the sort of turbulent note on which the overture ends, it helps us appreciate even more the serene beauty of this recitative as we shift from E minor to E major. That's a very, very good observation. So here is the couple last measures of the overture leading right into Comfort Ye My People.
Comfort ye.
Juan Diego Flores, and we'll just hear a little bit of the aria that follows. Anything you want to say about Every Valley Shall Be Exalted, which proceeds right from this recit?
Well, Every Valley Shall Be Exalted is probably a little bit of a primer for Handel's use of the technique we call text painting, where the notes are composed to support the meaning of the words or sound like what the words are expressing.
In a real literal way.
In a real literal way, sure. So, with the runs shall be exalted, and that run, that melisma, that goes a little higher, and a little higher, and a little higher, and exalted. And then when he talks about the crooked.
Yes.
And the rough places play.
Absolutely.
This is just classic.
Oh, amazing. Yeah. So here it is, a little more of Mr. Juan Diego Flores, and just a bit of this magnificent aria, Every Valley. Absolute genius from Mr. George Frederick Handel in this aria, Every Valley Shall Be Exalted. It just doesn't get much better than this. I should say I'm at this place where I so deeply appreciate Handel even more than I did, because at Carthage we just had an opera workshop devoted to Handel. Not a note of Handel's Messiah was part of that, but although we did sneak in a little oratorio here and there, but it was mostly a treatment of various arias, and I mean, his expressive abilities. Yeah. I mean, there is nothing stiff or starchy. Yeah. He was such a man of the theater, and of course Messiah, although it's an oratorio, it's an incredibly theatrical work, operatic in some respects.
And actually, that's a great point, a great connection, because he begins his career in. Obviously, he's composing stuff for the crown, for George the First, and then George the Second, the successor. But he begins writing opera, Italian opera, and that's all the rage. But then in the 1730s, opera begins to decline in popularity, and Handel is having to go more and more in his own pocket to subsidize operatic productions. And that's when he begins writing oratorios, and eventually oratorios take over, so that that's all that he writes. But a lot of times, in terms of the spirit of utterance, there's not a whole lot of difference between the opera and the oratorio, except that, of course, the oratorio isn't staged, intended to be staged and acted out, and the opera is.
And in English.
Yes, and it's in English, and that's important, because I think that too was part of the decline, the reason for the decline, that here was opera in Italian, and then people were beginning to do much less worthy music than Handel's music, but do it in English and attracting large crowds.
Who enjoyed hearing stuff they could more easily understand.
And that day before subtitles.
Oh, that's for sure. I thought it would be fun for us to sample a couple of choruses, and before we're done, we'll sample something extremely familiar. But because part of the whole point of what you're doing is doing the entire work, it's great to celebrate some of these very rarely heard moments from the work. And of course, this also will give us an opportunity to talk about your chorus and the kind of challenge which they are facing, not just you, but but your singers. But to kick off this portion of the program, I think we're going to listen to a seldom heard but wonderful chorus called Let Us Break Their Bonds Asunder.
Yes.
And this is probably also a good example of what you were just talking about in terms of text painting of Handel, taking a text and really bringing it alive musically.
Yeah. I mean, you know, you hear the opening subject, which is very disjunct, you know, to symbolize the breaking, the fracturing of the bonds. And so everything about this aria, to me, suggests brittleness.
Mm-hmm.
And he sets that up so well.
Here it is. Let Us Break Their Bonds Asunder from Handel's Messiah. Marvelous, marvelous stuff. And but what a tremendous challenge for you as the conductor, for your orchestra as players, and for your chorus as singers. Tell us about the chorus that's going to be featured in these performances and what kind of a challenge this represents for them.
Well, I am, by my own admission, a fan, an absolute fan of the people who are singing with me. They've done such a fabulous job. It's the Parkside Master Singers and Voices of Parkside, our chamber group, those two combined. And they began work on this back in September. And these are not a lot of notes to learn, and it's not always easy music. And most of the people who are singing this are not trained singers. They're people who like to sing, people who may have had some singing experience in the past, and in some instances, people who have very little singing experience, but are willing to submit to the discipline that the music imposes, to respect it, to master rhythms and pitches and texts and phrases and all of those kinds of things. And they have done an absolutely superb job with that. I am so incredibly proud of them.
Did you begin this fall?
We began this fall.
Wow. See, that in itself is staggering to me, to master all of this music in that amount of time. And I'm sure for the vast majority of these singers, much of this they've never sung before. I mean, they've certainly sung probably the big hits, many of them, but like the chorus we just heard or the chorus we're about to hear, that's brand new stuff and difficult.
Sure, yes, it is. But, they've been willing to put in as we say, sweat equity. and when you really think about that, and I tell them constantly, I try to reassure them, because I have the advantage as the conductor and as the one who's preparing them to sort of see what the outcome is going to be. And many times they are sort of mired in that moment in the rehearsal where they're trying to get that phrase and trying to get those pitches and that sort of thing. And I try to make a point of letting them know that what they're doing is exactly what they need to be doing, and that is caring a lot about what they're doing, working hard at it, and one accomplishment at a time, one accomplishment leads to another, and then at the end, and sometimes you have to do that. You have to say to them in October that I can hear what this is going to be like in December, and I have faith. Keep going. Don't give up. But they've been very responsive to
that. Well, that's great. You mentioned before we went on the air that one of your favorite choruses, which is also one of the most obscure, is called The Lord Gave the Word.
Yes, yes.
Tell our listeners what you find so intriguing about this, and then we'll hear at least a good portion of it.
Well, here's what I find intriguing. I think it's Handel's attempt to poke a little fun at the gentleman of the cloth, and the way that I get my singers to sort of understand that is I ask this question of all the people who are in various religious traditions, particularly Christian traditions. How many of you know a preacher, a pastor, or whatever, who doesn't have many words? And very few people raise their hands. I mean, and that's part of being a preacher, obviously, that you have this ability to verbalize lots of things. And so, what does he do? He has this chorus, which has these little melismas in it. Great was the God. And so you can just imagine all of these preachers, around here doing their preacher thing. And it is, and I'm sure that people kind of poked each other at those performances, especially those who had the guts to go to the theater to hear them. Because that was a controversy in London, not so much in Dublin, but in London at first. People said, well, we shouldn't be doing that kind of music in the theater. But this is a wonderful example of word painting. Great was the company of the preachers, and you can just see the preachers, all around doing their preacher talking and that kind of thing. It's really amazing.
Well, let's hear it then.
Yes.
This is The Lord Gave the Word. Great was the company of the preachers from Handel's Messiah. For those of you just joining us, I'm speaking with Dr. James Kinchin, Director of Choral Activities at the University of Wisconsin-Parkside, who is going to be conducting performances of The Complete Messiah of George Frideric Handel December 6th, 7th, and 8th. The 6th, 7:30, the 7th, 3:30, the 8th, 7:30 p.m. And we need to talk about where these performances are going to be occurring.
Yes, they're going to be occurring in Bedford Hall. Francis Bedford Concert Hall, which is in the Rita Talent Pick and Regional Center for Arts and Humanities, which we affectionately call the Rita on campus. And by the way, listeners should know that they can get tickets in advance through the box office by calling the box office, and sorry, I don't have that number readily available, or going online and getting tickets that way. And of course, tickets are available on the dates of the performance. But we're having this in Bedford Hall, which is this jewel of a space. Wonderful acoustic. I mean, it's worth coming if you didn't think you wanted to hear Messiah, and who wouldn't, and didn't want to hear people sing it and play it who are really connected with making this magnificent performance, just to be able to come and sit in that space. Beautiful space, and a space that where the acoustics really help enhance and give warmth to the music.
Oh, it's absolutely incredible place, and it's beautiful before you even heard a note of music. It's like walking into a gorgeous church, and before the service has even started, you're already worshiping because it's such a beautiful setting, and it's very, very much the same experience when you walk into that gorgeous room. And one thing that is, of course, a very, very exciting part of all this is that the woman for whom that hall is named will be sitting at the harpsichord.
Yes, that is absolutely amazing. Fran Bedford, who is a colleague, a faculty colleague, she was on the faculty between 1970 and 1994, and she's now emerita, and who was one of those people who helped recruit me to the campus, by the way. She is through her generosity that we have that space, and it's so you know that it's easy to have things named after people posthumously, but to have that hall there as a living testimony to a living legend, and she's going to come on stage and play the harpsichord as she has for every single performance of Messiah that we've done since 1993. We've done this is actually the 21st year of our series. And we've done it every 3 years, starting in 93 up to the present time. And every single one of those performances, even when we did a zillion of them here, there, and everywhere, she was always at the harpsichord. And so she will be at these performances.
It's only right.
Yes.
We have not yet talked about the soloists that you have gathered for these performances. What do you want to say about them?
In a word, they're magnificent singers. We are pleased to have our colleagues Amy Boutersee, soprano, Allison Hull will be doing the alto work. We'll have singing with us for the first time the tenor Scott Pullen, who's at a really nice instrument, and Brian Leeper will be doing the bass work, and they're all just wonderful soloists to hear.
Brian is a classmate of mine from college and from graduate school, a good friend, and he is a fine, fine singer, so I'm glad that he can be back for that. So we are talking just several days before the very first performance. Are you done rehearsing, or ahead of December 6th, is there one more chance to get things together?
We did a rehearsal, large rehearsal last night, and it was a very successful, very progressive rehearsal. We have a fine orchestra playing with us who brings not only their musicianship, but their heart to the performance as well. And we will have some rehearsing Friday evening and a little bit Saturday morning to make sure that we've got everything in place. And not just for the benefit of the chorus, but also to be sure that we have opportunities for all the soloists to sing and to have a chance to make sound in that hall with that orchestra.
Wonderful. By the way, has Alvaro Garcia, your orchestra director, played some role in the preparation of the orchestra? Or is that also something that you had to take responsibility for?
Well, I've taken responsibility for doing that, but I am just so honored that and amidst his very busy schedule, he has he's consented to play viola, and he's done viola with us now for the past, I want to say, the past four performances now. And this, I think, will make his fifth. And so we're so happy to have his experience and his musicianship in the viola section.
Terrific. So again, these performances of Handel's Messiah, the great oratorio Messiah, done in its entirety, will be December 6th, 7th, and 8th, respectively, 7:30, 3:30, 7:30.
Yes.
And it looks like the phone number for the box office at the University of Wisconsin Parkside is 595-2345.
Okay.
And I think that phone number, one way or another, will get you to whoever you need to talk to secure tickets for whatever performance that you want to attend And what a great treat it is to be able to encounter this work in its entirety. And on the podium will be Dr. James Kinchin. Dr. Kinchin, what a great pleasure to speak with you again about music, and particularly about this great masterpiece. And I trust that you'll once again have a marvelous series of successful performances of Messiah. Appreciate you joining me today on the morning
show.
Thank
you. It's always my pleasure. Thank you, Greg.
Great to have you here. Here is just a bit of the magnificent Christmas chorus, "For Unto Us a Child Is Born," to finish out our morning show today here on WGTV. The time is 8:59 here on WGTD HD, your gateway to public radio. And tomorrow on the morning show, we will preview the Racine Theatre Guild's production of Rodgers and Hammerstein's The Sound of Music. I'll be speaking with director Doug Instanis and with Samantha Sustacek, who is singing the role of Maria. Support for WGTD's morning show comes to you from Andrea's, a Kenosha tradition since 1911. A unique shopping experience time and time again, and that's what brings you back. And don't forget about Jack's Cafe. Andrea's a proud supporter of WGTD's morning show. Support also comes from Carthage College, dedicated to combining an environment of reflection and self-discovery with a culture of high expectation, designed to allow students to uncover and ignite their potential. More information about undergraduate and adult education opportunities at carthage.edu. A partly cloudy, partly sunny day today with a high of 33 degrees. Cloudy overnight with a low of 22. A sunny day tomorrow, again a high of 33 degrees.